You are listening to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. This week, we are bringing you a special podcast on Purim by Rabbi Rachel Berkowitz. This podcast is sponsored by Carrie Bornstein in honor of her first Gemara teacher, Rachel Berkowitz, whose passion, depth of knowledge, and commitment to an inclusive Judaism still inspires her over a decade after they were in the classroom together. For more original Torah learning, visit www.elmad.pardes.org.
Hello, listeners. It's Rachel Berkowitz here with your Pardes Purim podcast. Today, I want to share with you something interesting and a little bit different about Purim. We're not going to talk about the essence of the story itself, which is very exciting, and we're not going to talk about the mitzvot of the day, not the requirement to read the Megillah, as I talked about last year, or eating the seudah, the meal, or giving mishloach manot, or presents and food to the poor. But rather, we're going to look at a very interesting text that we're going to read in full in the moment from the Gemara in Shabbat that states that Purim is actually the moment when the Jewish people accepted the Torah and obligated themselves in the covenant with the divine. Now, this is a very strange text because right now when I'm recording this on Rosh Chodesh Adar, in the cycle of the Torah reading, we just 2 weeks ago, two Shabbatot ago, read Parshat Yitro with Ma'amar Har Sinai. And this week we continued, this past week we continued reading Parshat Mishpatim. And in the text of the Torah itself, it seems very, very clear that the Jewish people were active and willing partners in receiving Torah. In Parshat Yitro, in Parak Yud Tet, in chapter 19, Moshe goes up to speak to God. God makes the promise that the Jewish people, are, if they listen to God's voice and keep the covenant, they're going to be an Am Sgula, a chosen people, Mamlechet Kohanim, Vagoy Kadosh. And Moshe comes back and tells us the nation, and it says in Pasuk Chet, in verse 8, Vayenu kol ha'am, yachdav, vayamru, kol asher diber Hashem naaseh. Right, the nation answers in one voice and it says, everything that Hashem spoke, we will do. And then in Parshat Mishpatim, in Perek Chaf Dalet, twice this refrain is repeated. Moshe comes and tells the Am, Kol Divrei Hashem, Ve'kol HaMishpatim, right, everything Hashem said and all the laws, Ve'yan Kol Ha'am, Kol Echad Ve'yomru, Kol HaDvrim Asher Diber Hashem Na'aseh. So the nation responds in one voice and says, all the things that the divine spoke, we will do. And Moshe writes this down in a book and in Pasuk Zion, verse 7, it's repeated, Vayikach Sefer HaBrit, Vayikra B'yuznei Ha'am, Vayimru Kol Asher Diber Hashem, Naaseh V'nishma. Moshe took the book of the covenant and he read it in the ears of the nation and they said, all that God has spoken, we hear and we will do. So this seems like a very, very clear refrain that the Jewish people as a group, as a whole, have willingly accepted the Torah. So what is a bit crazy is that the Gemara in Shabbat, and Daf Pechet Amud Aleph, says the following. It takes a verse from Parshat Yitro, Vayitzvu b'tachtit ha'har. Right? It's a verse that was describing the layout of and the physical experience of Har Sinai. And it said, the pshat is that the nation gathered at the bottom of the hill, at the bottom of the mountain. Right? Presumably they were standing at the bottom and Moshe went up. But on this verse, Amar Rav Avdimi Bar Chama Bar Chasa, Melamed Shekafa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Alehem Et Ahar Kigigit. We learn from these words, and he takes B'tachtit Ha'ar, which I interpreted as the base of the mountain, and he literally interprets it on the underside of the mountain, like underneath it. And he says, we learn from this phrase that God, the divine, took the mountain like a jug, sort of lifted it up, and held it above their heads, that they were literally underneath it. V'amar lahem, this is what God said, Im etem mekablim ha'Torah mutav. Vim lav sham tiek for etchem. If you keep my Torah, if you keep Torah, that's going to be great for you. Everything's going to be good. But if not, here will be your burial. which is a very different description of feeling, of severe threat of death if one doesn't accept the Torah. And from this, we have a fascinating statement, Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Mikam Moda Rabba La'oraita. He says the following, a moda is a legal term used in normative transactions where someone can claim that they signed a document or they were forced into something under duress. They say, I didn't really want to do it. I was forced. It was under duress. And that is taken, has legal ramifications. So Rav Acha Bar Yaakov here says the same thing for the Jewish people, that they could claim duress vis-a-vis having to be responsible to uphold their side of the covenant, right? And on this line in the Gemara, Rashi says, She'im yizminu ladin, lama lo kiyamte ma shekibaltem aleichem, yesh lehem tshuva, shekibluhu ba'onas. Rashi says, if they would be, you know, invited to a court to say, why didn't you do what you accepted? Why haven't you been following the covenant? Why are you transgressing? Why aren't you keeping mitzvot? They have an answer. They could say it was done under duress. We were forced. We didn't have free choice. We never accepted this ourselves, right? Crazy idea. And from here, though, we're finally going to get to Purim. Amar Rabba, Af al pi chen hador kibluhu b'yamei Achashverosh, dechtiv kimu v'kiblu hayudim, Kimu ma shekiblu kvar. So Rava answers, despite all this, it's true what you said, that at Ma'amad Har Sinai it was forced, but in the time, in the generation of Achashverosh, we learn that the Jewish people accepted the Torah. And he quotes a pasuk from Esther, Perek Tet, that they established and accepted, or they understood and obligated, JPS says, what Mordechai required of them, and his drasha is kimu ma shekiblu kvar, that they established what they had already accepted, meaning they finally have affixed as obligatory what they had accepted on Har Sinai. So what's going on here? We have to try to unpack this. First of all, the verse from Esther, it happens at the end of the story. It seems pretty straightforward. It says Mordechai wrote down these things of what happened, and he sent out messengers to all the Yehudim. And in Perek Tet, Pasuk Kaf Aleph, verse 21, it says, L'kayem aleihem liot osim et yom ha'ba'aser l'chodesh adar v'et yom ha'misha'aser bo. Right? He says that they should observe these days, on these dates, as Purim. And in verse 23, kiblu ha'yudim et asher hechilu la'sot, they accepted what they had been doing based on what Mordechai had written to them. And then it goes through and it reviews some of the history that Hadman, Hagagit, Tzorer ha'yudim thought that the wanted to destroy the Jews and how they got saved, etc. It goes through the story, which I'm sure you know. And then in verse 27, it says, Kimu v'kiblu hayudim alehem ba'al zaram ba'al kol nilavim alehem. So they accepted upon themselves, they undertook and accepted what for themselves and for all generations to do exactly what had been written every single year. And so this is very interesting. It sounds particularly linked to the story of Purim, this verse. How do we understand the Gemara in Shabbat? So let's try to unpack it. The Gemara in Shabbat, in reference to Ma'amad Har Sinai, and this we could talk a lot about, but I'll just give one clear answer, even though we could spend a lot of time just unpacking this. What does it mean that it was forced, despite the fact that the verses seem to imply that the Jewish people accepted the Torah of their free will? I think that what Rav Avdimi wants to say to us is that the experience, the miracles of Mitzrayim, and then going to the desert, and then the way the Torah describes Matan Torah with the lightning and the thunder and the shofarot, and if whatever this means, I have no understanding, but if the divine were to speak directly to you and say, here's what I want you to do, it seems like it would be pretty difficult to say, I'm not really interested. Thanks, I'll pass. Right? I think that the experience was so intense and so overwhelming, and the fear and the awe that one must have felt was either I'm going to die or I'll do exactly what the divine wants of me. And that it really, even though they spoke in one voice saying we'll do whatever, that really, because it was such an awe-inspiring, overwhelming experience, that there was no free choice. That's how I'm going to understand the Gemara and Shabbos about Ma'amad Har Sinai. The question is, what then happened in Purim to say that this was the true acceptance? You could claim that in the story of Purim, there was also a miracle, and the Jews were also saved. And you could say to me, Rachel, so what? Okay, so they also they felt so overwhelmed and thought they were going to die there too. So I'd like to try to explain to you what I think is going on here. And to do that, I want to look at another Gemara in Masechet Megillah on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph on 7a. And there it tells sort of the historical background that Esther wrote, Shalcha lehem Esther lechachamim, kivuni ledorot. Esther sends a letter to the Chachamim that she wants to affix Purim as a holiday. And from that, the Gemara jumps off to a very interesting question. It opens with a halachic statement that sounds a bit funny. It says, Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Esther eina mitameh et hayadayim. That Esther, the book of Esther, the physical book of the Esther, doesn't make the hands unclean, doesn't render the hands ritually impure. And that this view of Shmuel is also the view of Rabbi Yeshua. Shmuel is a Babylonian Amora, and Rabbi Yeshua is a Tana in Eretz Yisrael. They both think that Esther doesn't make the hands unclean. Now, what does this mean? It means actually something quite important. The rabbis made a decree that the holy books, the Kitvei Kodesh, would be Metamei Yadayim, would make your hands ritually impure. Why? Because at that time period, the Jews were concerned. They didn't want their hands to be ritually impure, because they wouldn't be able to eat food that they only ate in a status of Tahara. And so they would refrain from touching these books. And the goal was to protect the holy books, that people wouldn't touch them so often and it would ruin the parchment. And you'd be sure to keep it in a safe place because you wouldn't want it to contaminate your food, because if you put it near where there'd be food, there'd be mice, and the books could get damaged. So as a way to show that something is considered a holy book and part of the canon, they said it would be Metamei Yadayim. But here we have the opposite, that Shmuel is saying, Esther, I don't think that's part of the holy canon. And Rabbi Yeshua, an early Tana, said, I don't think Esther is part of the holy canon, right? This is a very interesting class. We could also do a whole podcast on how they decided what was in the canon and which books they were sure about and which books they weren't sure. But it seems like Esther is one that they're not sure about. And I think we can understand that. We can understand that because it sounds like it's, the text itself doesn't mention God's name. It sounds like it's an historical account of something that happened, but who said that this is a holy book? So to prove their point, the Tanaim, who disagree and think it is a holy book, they try to bring all sorts of proofs. It's a very interesting Gemara. I suggest you look at it. They try to bring quotes from the book of Esther itself to prove. It says, you know, this is what Haman was thinking in his heart. Oh, how could we know what he was really thinking in his heart if we didn't have divine inspiration? That it was not, right? They want to make the suggestion that really, Rabbi Eliezer says, Omer Esther Baruch HaKodesh Ne'amah, that it was written with divine inspiration. So there's no way we could have known what Haman was thinking unless there was some Ruach HaKodesh. And they bring a number of examples like this where to try to prove the point that it was done Ruach HaKodesh, that there was some divine spirit in that explanation. There are other people who try to dissuade this and say, of course we can know what Haman was thinking. We see how he acted afterwards, so we assume we know what he was thinking. But overall, as you know, because Esther is part of the Tanakh, the overall accepted view is that it is one of Kitvei HaKodesh. It's a holy book, and it makes it into our canon. And on this idea, at the very end, after all these proof tests, and we get this, we have Shmuel speaking again. And Shmuel says, right, Babylonian Amora, he says, I have hatam, have amina milta da adifa mikulu. If I was there then, meaning if I was a Tana trying to argue if this is done in Ruach HaKodesh with the divine spirit or spiritually, has some type of divine intention to it, I would have said something better than everyone. I'd have a better proof than everyone. What's his proof? Shenemar kimu v'kiblu, kimu lamala masha kiblu lamata. So it's our same verse, but he has a different drasha on it. He said that they accepted in heaven what had been right? They established, or they affixed in heaven what had been accepted down below by the people, right? And he says there is a relationship between what the Jewish people did and the perception of it in Shamayim. So this is very interesting, meaning that he's acknowledging the tension that we have with Esther, that really it seems to be human beings that are acting in the story, and human beings that are writing the story, and human beings that are determining the chag. And we know this. It's called a mitzvah derabanan, right? It's not all the mitzvot of the day are not written in the Torah itself. And so he uses as proof, I don't know exactly how he knows, I'm going to try to suggest how he knows that Shemayim accepted this, that this must be in the book was written Baruch HaKodesh, and it can be part of our holy canon. So that sort of is a technical way we understand that the book is part of the canon. But if we think about actually what happened, what the Jewish people did, and the actions and the affixing of the mitzvot, and Mordechai writing the letters, and the Jewish people saying, yes, I'll accept, that's really interesting, right? That is really this idea that human action is given divine sanction, right? And it's played out in numerous interesting ways, right? With the brachot that we say when we read Megillat Esther, we say, Asher kitshanu mitzutav v'tzivanu, right? That you sanctified us and commanded us to read this book. It's even more difficult with another mitzvah to Rabbanan of lighting the Hanukkah candles, where there's not even a book that tells the story of the miracle of Hanukkah, and we have mitzvot there that we do it. And so the question is, how do we understand this? What is going on here? How do we understand what's happening in the holiday of Purim, and how does it relate to our original Gemara of saying that this is the place the Jewish people accepted the covenant? So to understand that, I'd like to share with you a very short line from Gemara in Gittin that I've been learning with my class this year at Pardes and Gemara in the mornings. So it's Gittin 60b. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lo kirei takadosh baruch hu brit im Yisrael, ela bishvil dvarim shebaal peh. That the only reason that the divine established a covenant with the Jewish people is for the oral law, is for the aspect of Torah that is more than just the written text, the going beyond, right? And however you understand that, that surely includes mitzvot, the Rabbanan, etc. And I think that this human involvement and partnership is essential. This human partnership, human involvement in the covenant is essential to understanding what is going on here. To do that, I'd like to quote my grandfather and something he wrote in Crisis in Faith. He says the following: according to an opinion in the Talmud, God concluded his covenant with Israel only on account of the oral tradition. A covenant is a relationship of mutuality. The covenantal relationship could find no expression in the revelation and acceptance of Torah at Sinai. It was a case, as the Talmud puts it, of kafa alehem har kigi, a law given imposed. Only in halacha is the covenant as mutuality of relationship fully present. So he is arguing that when the Torah is forced upon you at Har Sinai, that is a one-way street. The awe and the power and the incredibleness of experiencing revelation from the divine. But really, the partnership is of covenant has two sides to it. And for the other side to be fully present, they also have to act. The Jewish people have to act. And it's through the outplaying of halacha in the generations that this happens. And he says the following: this is our share in the covenant, the existential component of our participation in it. Loyalty to the Torah, to the divine partner, to the covenant, demands that we accept responsibility, notwithstanding the risk involved in the subjective aspect of our participation. Only thus may the generality and abstractness of the written Torah be transformed into Torat Chaim, its realization in whatever situation Jews may find themselves in the course of history. So it seems, I would like to understand, that what happened in Purim all those years ago in Shushan, what does it mean that finally the Jewish people had accepted Torah at that moment? They had taken their understanding of Torah and the playing out of how Torah is alive in one's lives. And when a new historical experience came upon them, they used those same Torah values and they expressed this new life experience in the mitzvot of Purim. And by actively adding, I don't want to say adding, but expanding the scope of Torah by actively initiating mitzvot derabanan, by marking their life experiences through mitzvot and defining their experience in history as relating to the divine, they became active partners in the covenant, which is what the divine wants of us, to be not passively accepting Torah, but to be actively paying out Torah in each new situation that happens throughout the course of Jewish history. So the Jewish people became partners in the covenant on Purim because they acted to express their life experience into an experience of a living Torah, of Torat Chaim. So I would say that the question for us today, or the challenge for us today, is what is our personal or our national Purim moment? When is it that we are going to step up and think about what the challenges and the needs are for today and apply our Torah consciousness and our experience of being mutual partners to the Brit and act for this moment in Jewish history? Chag Sameach.
Thank you for listening to Pardes from Jerusalem, the weekly Parsha podcast from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit www.elmad.pardes.org.